encouraged, not burdened by the history that they create. They know what is expected of them. They are Manchester United.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Fergie Fledglings. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined by Polly Questel today. About 24 hours after Manchester United's 4-3 defeat to Copenhagen in the UEFA Champions League group stage, we thought about, or I thought about maybe trying to record yesterday, but kind of glad we had a full 24 hours to process everything that happened. Polly, I know you have a lot of thoughts on this, so I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to you. Just because I mean, I'm not even sure where to start with this match. There's a lot to dive into.
We have to start with the ref, the referee and the VAR and everything. And that's the talking point of the game, pretty much, especially amongst United fans. They got screwed, bad decisions. There have undoubtedly been a lot of decisions that have not gone United's way this season. Like, they've had a lot of goals taken off the board because of VAR. There's been a lot of questionable ones.
All four Champions League matches, there's been a penalty given against United. And more than a couple run-ins with the UEFA handball rule, which popped up twice in this game.
It actually popped up four times.
And also popped up like 2 hours ago on Liverpool's, would be.
Yeah, different rule. There's been a lot that's gone against United. Everybody is up in arms. We've been saying this a lot, and we don't talk about refs on this show. And I think that's because I certainly don't want to. You don't want to. I don't think Nathan wants to. It is a distraction to distract you from the obvious issue. They are brought up all the time because you lose a game 4-3. Everybody wants to know what happened. Why did this happen? They want to blame somebody. So a manager has three choices. Blame the players? Not a good idea. Blame themselves? They don't like to do that. Blame someone who doesn't matter. Blame the ref. And that's what they do, and then that becomes the talking point. United have conceded 30 goals in 16 games this year in all competitions. That's not bad refereeing. That's bad playing. That is not because of the referee. But let's talk about this, because this is the big thing last night. I actually don't think the referee did a bad job. I don't think United got screwed. It's a matter of the rules and how they're applied and everything. Like, what everybody and VAR. The issue is VAR. And we're at a stage in VAR that was inevitable. It was inevitable that we were going to get here. VAR was supposed to come in and bring objective decisions to things. And the problem is, nothing in sport is objective. Like, ever since instant replay started, it came to hockey in the early 90s, but like, for all intents and purposes, video review challenges started in 1999 in the NFL. And they started because mistakes have always been a part of the game. But they started because people made high-profile mistakes. Colin might be too young to remember this, but in 1998, there were three big ones. The Jets had a quarterback sneak from the 1 yard line that came up like a yard short, and they ruled it a touchdown, which helped the Jets win the division. And I think it knocked Seattle out of the playoffs. There was the coin toss on Thanksgiving where, they called heads, yeah, and the referee was like, he called tails, and they lost the game. And then there was Jerry Rice fumbled the ball in the playoffs. The Packers recovered. They ruled it no fumble, and the 49ers went on to win the game. That we said, these are obvious errors. We need instant replay. And they put in all these rules for instant replay. What we can look at, what we can't. It's going to take 90 seconds. That's it. Because you only want to overturn the obvious. There is a human element of the game. And of course, in the first like few years of instant replay, that 90 second clock used to be on the screen and they would go over it every time. It always took them forever. And as we got HDTVs, you could see more. And it just became, you know, every so often there'd be a mistake that was plain and obvious, and they'd be like, well, that's not a reviewable play. And everybody go, why is that not reviewable? And we'd make it reviewable. It got to the point where we were reviewing pass interference calls we'd be challenging, being like, there was pass interference on that play.
And again, I mean, I remember the instance that led to that one, because I live in New Orleans Saints country. And I think that's one example of like the year after that, where it was basically one season in the NFL where they were like, you can challenge pass interference calls.
Or right. And basically every time they challenged it, the referees were
awful.
Like, no. We're already at this point where it's like, what is a catch? Nobody even knows, because as soon as you get into this situation, everybody's always convinced, like the refs get like 98-99% of the calls right. But you know, when a ref has a good game, you don't notice that. There's nobody sitting there being like, wow, that ref had a great game. He made 208 decisions and he got 207 of them correct. And the one that he got wrong was a throw-in. And writing blog posts about it. They're not talking about it on Sky Sports News or anything. You only remember the mistakes. So like when there's a high profile mistake, we tend to course correct. So there's obviously obvious handballs. There's obvious offsides that are missed. We want to bring in VAR. And at the beginning, VAR was implemented terribly, where every goal they were like, we have to check for a foul in the buildup. And any handball in the buildup would be deemed no goal. And it was like, we're reviewing every goal and finding reasons to not give the goal. And credit to the Premier League, after a year, they're like, our bad, we got to scrap that. But the other thing that football in general realized was there's nothing objective in football. Like, there's one thing objective. Did the ball go in or not? And we have goal line technology for that. No one has complained about that. It's not perfect. It's made one screw up, and that was a colossal screw up. A team got relegated for it. So even the best technology is going to make a mistake once every 1,000 times, and you just hope that one time isn't a big deal. In this case, it was. So where do you go? Like, there is subjectivity to handball. It's like, yeah, ball hit his hand, but like, did the ball hit his hand or did he hand the ball? Where's his arm? This. And there's been two different approaches to that. UEFA has taken this approach of, in order to make the, like, we want an objective system, so therefore we just have to make the handball rule objective. And therefore, if the ball hit your hand, it's a handball. This way we can review it and we could say, yes, that hit your hand, done. That did not hit your hand, no handball. The Premier League has gone into the other way, where they've been like, it's a subjective thing and there's different things you have to take into context. And therefore, you're now asking the referee, a human, to make a decision on the field and weigh up all those things. And then you're asking somebody watching it on video to also weigh up the same things and make another human subjective decision. And when that happens,
asking them to do it really quickly in front of tens of thousands of people.
Right. But even then, you will never, ever, 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 ever have consistency with that. Because anybody who has ever played sport knows there's no consistency from one game to the next. The only thing you can ask for is, can the ref be consistent through the game? You're playing baseball and it's like he's calling a very tight strike zone. At the letters, he's calling that a ball. A little bit below the knee, he's calling that a strike. And you're like, okay, as long as for every pitch that's a little bit below the knee, he calls it a strike, we're fine here. I know as a batter, I got to watch a little bit lower. I know as a pitcher, I got to throw a little bit lower. As long as it's consistent on a game-to-game basis. But then the next day, you're going to have a different umpire who's going to call it differently. He's going to be like, no, I'm calling the high strikes. There will never be consistency on a day-to-day basis through, like, when you have humans like that. So therefore, there's always going to be a scenario where it's like, that ball hit his hand. Why was that a penalty? And why, in another game with a different referee in a very similar situation, is it not? And the Premier League invites more of that on it by having a much looser interpretation of the handball rule and making it much more subjective. Now, let's just say that the Premier League was very consistent. And any one of these close plays, they've ruled exactly the same way in all of them. You will still never have consistency when the Premier League has one interpretation of a rule and UEFA has a different interpretation of a rule, and you are playing on Saturday with one set of rules and then you play on Wednesday with another set of rules. UEFA has been very consistent about the handball across every game. If it hits your hand, it's basically, it's done so. And neither one of the penalties yesterday should have been penalties. I thought they were both very soft, but like the ball hit Rafael Varane in the arm and then it hit Maguire in the arm. The referee gave the penalty. Then the next one was insanely soft, but like you could basically see them being like, we gave that first one, we have to give the second one. And they are consistent. If you watch other games, it's the same thing. Like every week there's people complaining while they watch the Champions League base being like UEFA's interpretation of the rule is basically defenders shouldn't have arms and you're penalizing them for having arms. So even if everybody was consistent, you wouldn't see it and you wouldn't notice it when on a game to game basis, when you play in the Premier League on Saturday, it's one rule. Then you play in the League Cup on Wednesday, it's a different set of rules. Then you're back to the Premier League and then you're back to UEFA and it's a third set of rules. It's never consistent across the board.
And this is after
ultimately
IFAB has also made like numerous adjustments to the rules as they are written, which
exactly
I think when VAR
and they've rewritten the rules for basically for VAR to try to make it easier on VAR. So like, but that's the issue is you're just adding this subjective layer and this subjective layer. And that's sort of what happened on that first goal was in the Premier League, like there's a different approach to, is that player interfering with play than it is in UEFA. And I like I said before, I thought there were four instances of handball and they only gave two of them. First minute of the game, McTominay kicked the ball right into Maguire's hand. And I texted you about it, but I was actually shocked that they didn't give that. I was like, oh shit, that's a problem because in UEFA, that's a handball. And following the penalty that Bruno made when the score was still 3-2, there was another situation where like a ball grazed Copenhagen's player's arm in the box. And I was like, that's not a penalty. And they didn't give it. And it was like, UEFA rules, that's a penalty. But like now it's even like both teams got a dumb penalty. Both teams got away with one that they should have gotten away with one, but in UEFA's eyes, easily could have been given. The consistency is there. It's just a matter of...
It just sucks.
because it sucks. The rule is dumb. The way UEFA does it is dumb. But like, again, they're trying to make they're trying to make it...
Yeah. I mean,
something objective.
We see the alternative, and that sucks too.
The issue is VAR. Like, just go back to having and the thing is, they'll never do it because as soon as a referee makes one mistake, everybody is up in arms about it. And again, referees, they make in a 90-minute game, they're making hundreds of decisions, and they're getting less than 1% of them wrong. But like, if you're making 200 decisions and you make like 1% wrong, that's two decisions. If they're big, everybody's up in arms. You know, sometimes it's like, he didn't give a foul at midfield when he should have, and they just played on. Sometimes it's bigger than that. And that's like the thing is, it's already a subjective measure that, everything's going against United right now, but that's not what's preventing this team from this team capitulated as soon as they got sent down to 10 men in a decision that was consistent with what UEFA has done. That Rashford tackle, I don't agree with it. I did not think it was a red ever, but Paul Pogba did this very similar against PSG, got sent off. Aaron Wan-Bissaka had a very similar play against Young Boys, got sent off.
I think Fred's was a little bit more like lunging in against PSG, but...
And that was the second yellow, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But basically, when studs go into ankle and a camera has a good look at it, you're probably going to get a red. And that seems like it's a little bit more of the case in the Premier League now as well. I think the Curtis Jones red card against Tottenham, I mean, that was another big talking point, which, by the way, it's kind of funny that all the fan bases online are like constantly making fun of each other's complaints about this, and yet it's happening to like three or four
because it happens to everybody. That's that has been sport always.
Yeah.
And that's ask a commentator on the game. ask a commentator and they'll tell you, oh, all I get is hate messages from fans of this, you know, I get hate messages from everybody saying I'm biased against their team. And he's like, both fans think I'm biased against their team. That is everybody. Yeah. Everybody thinks the ref did a crap job and he's out to screw them. And they've been consistent about that studs into thing. And even the Casemiro one last season where he went over the ball. And I didn't think that was a red card. But like comparing it to what happened in the Spurs Chelsea match this week, that's apples and oranges. The Premier League is different than UEFA. Now, I'll say this. We are recording on Thursday. We have seen what happened in the Liverpool match today. And that should have been a red card. Just because they got that one wrong doesn't mean they got the Rashford one wrong or that there's an agenda out there. It just means like the referees in the Europa League are a tier below the Champions League. The Champions League gets the best referees from each country and the Europa League gets the next best ones. And they got it wrong. That happens too. Like just because they got it wrong when City scored when Akanji was a mile offside doesn't mean that they should be disallowed, that they should be letting everybody do it. It means they got it wrong. And in other situations, they got it right. And City got a break there. And the bottom line is good teams create their own breaks. Yes, sometimes you get an absolutely ridiculous break like Akanji, but the decisions tend to go for the good teams because they constantly put themselves in positions to do that.
And if you're creating United, like 80% of the chances in the match for yourself.
United won a ton of penalties under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer because Rashford, Martial, Dan James, Bruno, they often got themselves in situations one-on-one with defenders running at them in the box. United don't do that anymore. You see Antony, Rashford, Garnacho, they run at one, two. They don't get one-on-ones. They get one-on-twos, one-on-threes. You're not going to win a penalty like that. United have gotten like a one-on-one in the box like once this year. And Rashford won a penalty. Good teams. I absolutely do not agree with the goal, McTominay's goal coming off the board against Fulham. I don't understand how that was deemed an offside. Like I thought that was absolutely terrible. A good team would shake that off and be like, we have 80 minutes left to play. And they'd go ahead and they'd still beat Fulham 2-0, 3-0. They'd be like, right, it took us 7 minutes to score. Let's just go and score again. It should not require you to get a 90th minute winner. That's not because VAR took your goal off. That's because you weren't good.
This goes back to, I mean, the Saints thing we were talking about earlier. So the pass interference thing came on, or the pass interference review in the NFL came after an NFC Championship game. So the game that decides who from that division goes to the Super Bowl. The Saints had a very obvious pass interference not called. There were petitions, going back to Liverpool and Arsenal from a week or so ago and all the fun people were having at that. There were petitions from Saints fans to replay the game from that point. You get a whole season afterward where the NFL kind of capitulates and they allow pass interference to be reviewed. And everyone, you know, rightly points out that was a play where something should have happened. What nobody else talks about is the Saints in that game got the ball in overtime with a chance to win the game again. They could have kicked a field goal to win the game. And instead they didn't. You know, that's with United and the McTominay goal, that happens in the first, 20 minutes of the match. You have a full 80 minutes after.
7 minutes. 7 minutes. They had 80 minutes to go on and score another goal. They finished the game with like 0.6 XG. Like you were terrible.
Yes.
This was a smash and grab against Fulham, which is something that we never should be saying against Fulham. Like, I get it. Like, United have historically had issues at Craven Cottage, but
this they've also had some really fun goals at Craven Cottage, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is the second straight year that it required a last ditch winner. The difference was last year, they just squandered chance after chance after chance that they scored, and it was like a nice sigh of relief of like, thank God we won that, but also very justified and deserved win. Like they created over 2 XG in that game. Like they should have had 2 goals. This game, they arguably did not deserve a single goal. Granted that one did get taken off the board, but Fulham deserved just like at most United deserved a draw because Fulham should have scored a goal too. This was a true smash and grab in sense of you did not deserve the 3 points and you grabbed them versus, that Fulham game last year or the game against Ammonia at home where they had like an XG of over four, and their goalkeeper just stood on his head. United squandered a billion chances, and McTominay finally, in like the 94th minute, got the winner, where it's like, yeah, no, they deserved all 3 points. It's not the refereeing. You're just bad. The more we keep blaming the ref, is the more you're trying to avoid facing the problems, which means the problems are never going to get fixed.
Yeah. In the Copenhagen game yesterday, I would argue that probably the Rashford decision is what's been on my mind much more than, you know, the penalties. I think refereeing is just, it's just like a popular narrative now. So that's always going to catch on, especially in games like this where
have refs in the studios now. Like, you watch a game on Fox and Mark Clattenburg's coming in. Dr. Joe Matchnick is coming on.
CBS has their own Dean Bland.
Every NFL broadcast has a rules guy. There's now rules guys when you watch hockey. There's a rules guy when you watch college basketball. It's every sport because they know that's what spurs conversation.
Yeah. But in this particular case, I mean, not only were they 2-0 up, and then, you know, the refereeing decisions go against them. There's lots of stoppage time. Copenhagen get back in it. Fine. They come back in the second half, organized, and they put themselves in a chance to win the game again. You know, they win the penalty, you know.
And then they're 3-2 up.
And they're 3-2 up to see it out. And then, again, they give it away. And, you know, we were talking about it this morning with Carl and kind of the fear that this was just inevitably going to happen, that this collapse in the last 10 minutes, that has nothing to do with refereeing or decisions that go against United. That's just the vibe that this team gives off at this moment. And they deserve to throw it away with the mistakes that they made in the final 10 minutes. You know, it wasn't because they were down to 10 men that they conceded those goals. It's because they weren't organized and they made mistakes in key moments.
Exactly. It was, playing with 10 men for 60 minutes wears you down and everything. Well, you didn't change anybody. You made one change before 10 men because of an injury. You brought on somebody at halftime, and then you brought on somebody in what, the 83rd minute or something. You could have used other subs to make sure that players were fresh. And it wasn't United under siege with 10 men hanging on with 10 men. If they could have just hung on for another 7 minutes, but that breakthrough was inevitable. This was, like, United doing very well and playing fine, but, like, also it seemed inevitable that they would screw up, and it was just, they screwed up. Like, they made twice dumb mistakes that they have been making all season long. And everybody, it's not, people have moved on from the red card. It took 3 minutes for the red card to come to be brandished for United to already concede a goal. And then, of course, it went to, they concede the goal. There's a kickoff. Within 5 minutes, they concede another goal. But that first goal, now everybody wants to rewrite the book and be like, well, he was offside. And part of that's Ten Hag calling it out in the press conference. But that's Ten Hag's job, is, again, blame the players, blame the coach, or blame the ref. So he's finding something to complain about, where a coach, what his job is to do is just to go out there and blame the ref for that. And then immediately go back into his office and be like, okay, let me figure out why the hell we had nobody marking the guy crossing the ball. We had nobody on the back post when the guy played it back. And then Varane's man ended up with 2 meters of space between him and Varane to get a shot from there. Why did that all happen? Why does that keep happening all year? That's what the coach needs to figure out. He can't just sit there and be like, ah, shit, referee made a terrible choice and that cost us the game. Like, you need to say, why did this happen? And I'll be honest, everybody's now complaining, like, oh, Onana's there, and like, VAR didn't even check it. VAR did check it. There is an article out that explains it. I asked two different journalists today if it was offsides. Neither of them said yes. VAR, there was an article out by Dale Johnson, who writes about VAR all the time, who explained it and basically said, if you watch the play, it doesn't look like the, if you take that screenshot, it looks like he's in Onana's line of sight. If you watch the play, it doesn't look like that. He's running away from the ball. He's running left. Onana's moving right. They obviously cross over for a brief second, but they're both moving. And he said the shot goes to the right rather than back towards the player. That factors into it. And he said, ultimately, this is, especially in UEFA, this is one that gets left to the field, where if the linesman gives the goal, it's a goal. If the linesman raises his flag, they're not going to step in and say, no, he's actually not involved in the play at all. I would also like to see the actual, like, behind the net camera angle of this, because I don't think he's actually even in Onana's line of sight during this thing. Onana is someone that wears his emotions on the sleeve. And when he gets slighted,
he would have said something.
He lets you hear about it. He at no point even said, hey, that guy was in my way. And not a single United hand went up, nothing. And Onana never stops moving. He's aiming. He looks right because that's where the ball goes. It gets cut back to the middle. He starts moving towards the middle. And in one motion, he dives to try to make the stop. It never looks like he lost track of that ball. And at halftime and at full time here in the United States, Peter Schmeichel was on the show, and Peter Schmeichel had a laundry list of complaints about this game. The red card, this, that, and the other. Never mentioned offsides here. And no pundit has. The broadcast never even talked about it, because it never even looked like it had an effect on the play. It's United fans trying to harp on something. Obviously, Ten Hag's got to say it, but now fans are harping on it because you just want to blame someone rather than the fact that you're not good. You've conceded 11 goals in 4 European games. That's not good.
This is like that Jose Mourinho clip where his assistant like whispers in his ear.
And then he like jumps up
and he immediately jumps up. Yeah, it's like he didn't even see it. He's just like, oh, I got to go cause noise about this. I will say, it is crazy that Manchester United have 2-4-3 losses in the group stage. And in neither of those 4-3 score lines could you argue that they probably should have won the match just based on performance.
I would say they probably should have won yesterday. They went 3-2 up. Yes, yeah, it felt inevitable that they would blow it, but they should have won.
And then the other thing.
Okay, wait, let's dive into this. So obviously the red card changes things. Performance before the red card, everybody is gushing about it. Oh, that was brilliant. That was unbelievable. It was amazing.
5 chances in 3 minutes.
Right before that red card came out, I was about, like, if that red card came, if that VAR check thing came on the screen 10 seconds later, I would have hit the tweet button saying, this match looks like a vintage Manchester United performance if the vintage is 2022, 2023. It looked like that last year of like, yeah, they've kept Copenhagen away and like, they've created,
let's just invite space because
and they've
we're
created
out
a couple of really, really good chances that this time they finished off and last year they didn't. But ultimately, like, they haven't created anything. Yeah, you were just about to harp on it. If this was good and dominant, they would have created more than 5 shots. Everybody's going gaga over that first goal. And how it came, you know, the 27 passes and the buildup and everything. And I was like, no, they were just, there was a lot of passes there that were like, we're trying to build up and Copenhagen are stopping, so we're going backwards. And that's fine.
But
if that was what Ten Hag, if that was the idealized version of Ten Hag ball, then you, and that was like, oh, this is what it looks like when it's worth, it's like, you would have done that again. Yeah. You would have done that again, and then you wouldn't have.
And Rasmus Højlund would
have
been
goals 25
in
more minutes. It wouldn't have been 25 minutes until your next shot. Granted, there was a big delay, but still, your next shot came on a counterattack, and then Højlund tapped in the rebound, and then your next shot came because Copenhagen just coughed up the ball. That one was a good press. There was one in the second half where they just coughed it up, but that one was actually a very good press, and Højlund took a good shot. But that was it. Like, there was, if it was a repeatable pattern, you would have done it again, and you would have been hounding them. You would have been right before the second goal. I was about to text you and be like, they're playing really well, but like, you're still one mistake. It's a 1-1 game. Maybe you should try taking another shot because you might want to try scoring a second goal.
Or just like when you're on the ball, you don't have to hoof it. I mean, they were doing that before they were down a man. When they got the ball and they were trying to start quick transitions, and you know there were passes to be played, and instead, it was, you know, a bit more route one than maybe it should have been.
I don't mind that so much because that's what they're good at. That's what they're playing.
Back to the first goal, you know, part of why it looks so good and why it looks so neat, you know, from players who potentially, you know, could do that more often, but don't because they're not, you know, always that sort of player, comes down to
playing an English team.
You're like playing against Copenhagen. Yeah. You're playing against the team that everyone picked to finish fourth. You know, like, sure, they're the Danish champions and they end up beating you on the day.
You should be much better than Copenhagen. And I don't say that because you're Manchester United. I say that because West Ham should be much better than Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Like, if Copenhagen were in the Premier League, they'd be in a relegation battle.
Yes.
That first goal, it was a lot of passing around the back. Then they'd move it up to midfield and they would come straight back. And eventually they made their move because of like a back heel from Bruno to Rashford. And there was more than one like nice little flick in there. And then a very high looped ball from Bruno to Rashford who brought it down. And then Juan Bissaka made that nice little underlapping run and made the very nice pass to McTominay who made a great run. Good cross. But again, if it's a repeatable pattern, you do it more. You know, if you're trying to win a game and you say, I have a way to score a goal or at least get a shot, you wouldn't do it once and be like, well, that worked. Put it in the locker. We'll take that back out maybe on Boxing Day. You would do it again and you do it until they stop you, until they figure it out. So
I think Copenhagen were almost like they were playing in a way where they had sort of conceded defeat after the second goal went in. And part of the reason they got back into it is because they realized United going down to 10 men, that's a vulnerable moment, and they were able to take advantage, and it changed the course of the game.
I didn't think that that pre-red card United were like flying. And again, I texted you like a win against this crap Copenhagen team and then a win against crappy Luton. Everybody's going to go through the international break being like, we're back. And it's like, no, we beat a bad team and like, we're doing okay at it. We don't get me wrong. Like, we looked like we should have looked against Copenhagen. Like, we looked good, but like, it was like, this isn't really good. And if you do this against better teams, it's not going to look like that. We probably should look better, but by no means bad. I don't want to say it. I very much want to stress that it was not bad. And it was the best that they've played all year. That's a problem.
No, that's bad.
Right. But if Rashford doesn't get sent off, yeah, they win that game easily. They maybe score a third, maybe a fourth, like because they did create a couple of high quality chances, and Copenhagen were coming nowhere near their goal. But you go down to 10 men again, you should be able to see it out to halftime at 2-0, maybe 2-1, maybe Copenhagen grab a quick one, and like you should be good enough to not capitulate completely. And that has been the story of United all season long. As soon as something happens, they capitulate. They concede goals in bursts. And so fine. It goes 2-2 and you go, all right, you get into the dressing room, you get your heads on straight. But like you said, they put themselves in a position to win. They went up 3-2. They now knew the stakes. The stakes didn't change. The stakes did change between 2-0 and 2-2. Rashford got sent off. They did not change once they went up 3-2. You should be able to see it out with 10 men against the Copenhagen side. And they couldn't do that.
Maybe the only, like, truly, you know, beyond comprehension inevitability that should have been seen in this game was a kid born in 2005 named Rooney came on for Copenhagen trying to, you know, make a comeback against Manchester United in the Champions League.
And when he first came on, you know what happened? Amrabat just fed him the ball, and he got it. And even Claude Tilden,
he took
not
one touch
pass
and
it.
Was like, "I'm making
he's not going to pass it." And
Arsenal.
Then he took a shot that went 30 yards wide.
Yeah.
He took a shot that went 30 yards wide, or no, just missed high and wide.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Yeah, he got a little excited. It's, you know, he just came on, 17 years old.
I mean, he was unmarked. before the goal on at least two occasions where you know, Copenhagen were trying to force the ball into the box, and he was just
and then that final goal comes because Varane coughs up a very easy ball, and they managed to stop the initial burst. Onana like gets a hand on it, and then the follow-up shot is so bad that it doesn't even go out. It goes to the corner flag and doesn't even go out for a throw. So Copenhagen were able to keep it in play, and that's what they scored off. But it started with Varane making just a horrific pass when he never should have. And that's a whole different ballgame because Rafael Varane was not even in the starting 11. And that's an issue on this team. So you talk to anybody now and they're just like, there's clearly something going on between the manager and the coach.
Yeah, there's something.
Not the manager and the coach, the player and the coach.
So I look back at the text you sent. Beating a bad Copenhagen team followed by beating shitty Luton, gonna have everyone spending the international break thinking this team is good. You sent that about
half
an hour into the game.
You said we're back, and then I
said we're so back until it's so over. That was at 34
like 20
minutes
later. I was like, you were a little
10 minutes, like 15
this already
minutes later,
happened.
It was 2-2. Like, yeah.
It's already over.
Yeah. That was a rough one.
The Varane thing is weird because the Varane thing just goes to Ten Hag's stubbornness. We talked about it on the last show. He has made it clear Maguire is above Varane in the pecking order right now. Maguire's your guy. And he's like, I don't want to put Maguire on the left side. And that's where the stubbornness is. Like, I think what you gain from Evans playing on the left with Maguire on the right, isn't as much as what you gain, as what you lose. Like, it doesn't outweigh what you lose by putting Maguire on the left and Varane on the right. I think you gain more from that. And he just doesn't see it that way. Varane, there's something going on, but like people are mad because reports keep coming out that the players are unhappy under Ten Hag. And it's always the same media outlets, et cetera, that do this, the same journalists. It's low hanging fruit, but
it's all of them.
if you and I are like, why does Bruno keep playing on the right wing? And why does Johnny Evans keep starting over Ron when it's not working? You don't think that there's some people in the dressing room thinking the same thing? You think every single person in that dressing room is on board with Johnny Evans starting over Varane? And people get annoyed whenever that happens. And they're like, how do United allow these things to keep happening? How do they keep allowing these leaks to happen? First of all, United do their fair share of leaking themselves. Second of all, maybe they know who's leaking things, and maybe that player isn't playing. Like maybe you're wondering, hey, why isn't this guy getting on the pitch? Maybe it's because he's the one leaking things to the media. Like we don't know. We know like 3% of what goes on in these dressing rooms. That when coaches actually want to discipline players, we don't know about it.
And the idea that is ridiculous too, like, you know, people will say this is just like a whingy generation, or you know, this is just a poisonous squad problem that keeps popping up. This has happened throughout the history of football. Whenever anything goes wrong, whenever things go wrong to this scale, I mean, Manchester United aren't used to it because for a lot of us, we grew up, you know, over a period of 26 and a half years where it wasn't a problem because, you know, when there was a spat between a player and a manager, usually it was also happening within, you know, winning a cup or, you know, challenging for the league title or over the course of 26 and a half years. And, you know, we ain't like that anymore. When things go bad, we're down in the mud like everybody else.
Factor in two things. When you have a manager that's been there forever, he's got some credit in the bank that when he says, I'm selling David Beckham, you're like, okay, fine. You've got that credit in the bank. If this is what you say goes, that's what goes. But guess what? They sold David Beckham, and 2 years later, people were United finished third, and people were calling for Fergie's head, like within 2 years of that. Don't forget that part. He knew what he was doing, but people were mad.
And Ruud van Nistelrooy, like,
yeah,
you know, that
one just worked right away.
Yes, because the replacement for him, for that goal scoring ended up being, you know, the foundation of success for 4 to 5 years after that.
Exactly. The other thing is, like, so one, Ten Hag doesn't have credit in the bank like that yet. People are already like urging them to give it to him. Like, oh, whatever the manager says goes, back the manager. Blah, blah, blah. The people's favorite line is nobody's bigger than the club, but then United have this God complex. And United fans, they love to say nobody's bigger than the club, but then they immediately want to be like the manager. Whatever he says goes. As the manager is bigger than the club. What if the manager's a moron? And also they want to say the manager should be the one making the transfers. And we no one person is going to solve this. And then be like, well, if Ten Hag wants that player, they need to back him and get him that player. So essentially the manager, give him what he wants, because the manager is the one that's going to fix all this. And that is just not true at all.
But what if that guy is just somebody he met like 10 years ago who listened to what he told him to do?
Right. But now think about this. Also the difference between someone like Ferguson, or if we don't want to use Ferguson, because someone like Arsene Wenger, and a situation like Ten Hag, where you've got a situation now all season. Antony is his guy. He signed him. That's his guy. Jadon Sancho is not. Jadon Sancho was here before Erik ten Hag. Rafael Varane was here before Erik ten Hag. I would try to use other examples, but all the other guys that ten Hag signed don't seem to be in the 11. But like Aaron Wan-Bissaka was not signed by ten Hag. And so you have that kind of situation, whereas where players might feel slighted. They might feel, I am outperforming other, you know, that guy isn't performing, but he was signed by the manager versus I was already here. So he's preferring him to, you know, he gives him chance after chance after chance versus he gives me the Mourinho of, here, you could start a game. And then it's like, ah, you misplaced that pass, you're off. Whereas after, you know, once a manager's been here, look at Liverpool right now. How many players at Liverpool did not come in under Jurgen Klopp? I don't think they have any. I think every single person there now that Firmino's left, like every player there was either brought through the academy by Klopp or signed by Klopp. They're all his guy. And that's a huge difference now in the dichotomy of things, like of when the manager has brought in, when every player has arrived during that era, like, you were his guy at one point, but like, you understand, like, there's competition and you might be older and a squad player now, but it's definitely different when he brings in someone who isn't performing and you were the guy that, like, yeah, he got here and he never liked me. That's going to always cause rifts, and that's going to happen everywhere in football because managers keep changing every 2 or 3 years and players are on 5-year contracts. You can't get rid of them.
So Luton.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Luton Town.
do we have any, like, okay, so like looking at Manchester United this season, they've lost what, 50% of their games, and they've won like 55% of their games, and then they've won like 45%.
No, they've lost 9 games now, right?
Yeah, they've lost
9 games. They've played 16. That's more than 50%.
Yeah, so it's like 55% losses, 45% wins across all competitions. No draws.
That's why they're eighth, because they don't draw games. It's they win and they lose, and they turn draws into they've turned one or two draws, Crystal Palace and Arsenal, into losses. They've turned a lot of draws into wins.
And now they play a bad team that suddenly has a couple results kind of go its way. Do we feel any sort of certainty that Manchester United beat Luton Town, who by
you
all
cannot
accounts,
be
are the
certain
worst
about
squad
this team at all? You cannot be certain about this team at all. I am as certain as one can be that they win this game. Not in a pretty, like, it could look like Fulham. It'll probably look like Burnley. But the one thing United have done consistently, they can't win away under Ten Hag. They can't win away from home, but they beat bad teams away from home. And they beat the newly promoted teams away from home. And Luton are really bad. Like, United got by against Fulham because they have better players. And even though they played absolutely awful. And if they do that again against Luton, Fulham are not good. Luton are way worse. So if they do that again against Luton, they should win.
The way you just described the Fulham match is literally every Man United win this season.
Yeah, it has been. There has not been a good game other than Crystal Palace put out their rotated side and we beat them. And we put out a bunch of guys that we rotate. We basically made 10 changes from an injured team and we put out like 7 guys who would typically be starters and beat them.
Yeah.
They should win this game. They do beat bad teams. They do beat the newly promoted teams. It might not look pretty. They might have stumbled upon a good front three. And the front three that I've been waiting to see in that is putting Rashford on the right and Garnacho on the left with Højlund down the middle. It was pretty, like, they looked pretty dynamic and they looked like they, Rashford just looked like he had so many more ideas yesterday. He's a different player on the right. He's not necessarily a better player, but he's different and he fits what this team does. Rashford on the left does not fit Rasmus Højlund. Rasmus Højlund along with left wing Marcus Rashford do not get along. And if you think they have this connection, let me tell you something. You want to guess how many shots Højlund has that were assisted by Rashford?
I mean, we're kind of running out of time, so why don't you just tell me?
Three this year. And he has 3 from Bruno Fernandes, none from Garnacho, none from Antony. Like, you're not, they're not, and Højlund has not assisted any Rashford shots. Like, it's not working, even though at times it looks like, even though he did that really nice play on the touchline against Arsenal and then replicated it the next match against Brighton, the ball happened to go out of bounds.
Yeah. But the cross was from the right. The cross assist was from the right. Goal. Yeah.
Right. Well, that was in the Champions League. I'm talking about the Premier League.
Right.
It just looks like you're going to get more invention out of Rashford on the right than putting any left footer out there that's trying to cut inside, because that's all Garnacho's trying to do anyway. So hopefully they run that back again, because it actually looked good, and I didn't think Garnacho deserved to start this game. But hopefully...
But it means Antony doesn't start this game.
It also means Antony doesn't start this game. He was so bad against Fulham. comically bad. But, like, where the hell's Mason Mount? Like, see, that's the thing, is you're starting McTominay. So you already lack a creator. So
we're not finding logic in any 11 that Erik ten Hag puts out at this point.
I said to you yesterday, like, every time he puts out the 11, I get the same energy as when Solskjaer ran back an unchanged 11 against Liverpool and promptly lost 5-0 after that 11 got gobsmacked against Atalanta. Yeah. It's just they've had moments where people are like, you could build on this, like Brentford coming back to winning and then they just don't. It's like, you're not building on a 90th minute winner against Fulham when the first 90 minutes were awful.
Yeah. The one positive, though, is I'm actually learning to enjoy these international breaks as a break from Manchester to, you know, watch Marcus Rashford go and enjoy playing football.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back next week to talk about the Luton match, which will hopefully be a win. And Nathan will be back. We've had some interesting schedules with, jobs and moving and
all. Yeah, Nathan moved this week. I moved last week.
Yeah. So hopefully.
I had to go to MetLife Stadium to watch the Jets be awful on Monday.
Like, and the Jets have had some sort of like Man United sort of wins this year. And
they haven't, because the Jets are very good on defense.
That's fair. That's fair. But yeah, we'll be back next week. We thank you for listening and, you know, bearing with us through another bad season, which, you know, probably only going to get worse. It's not going to stop. It's happening again.
I have that piece coming out maybe tomorrow. Maybe, yeah. Maybe I wrote it and I finished it. It's coming out tomorrow, or unless I write about VAR, it'll come out. But yeah, like that's the problem with this team is, and that's the problem with comparing Erik ten Hag to like Mikel Arteta, is that you could have looked at Arteta's Arsenal teams who were, they had a very distinct style from early on, but not the players to play it. And because of that, they played some horrific football and sometimes got their asses handed to them, but he put in some very young guys. Team was very young and it was like natural progression. If you do nothing, this team will be better next year than they were this year. And you cannot say that about United.
Yeah. I think the only thing Erik ten Hag and Mikel Arteta have in common right now is probably their YouTube search history. Oh, that's all you had. Okay. That's a whole other.
No, that joke did not land. I didn't get it.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week. Look out for that. I'm also curating a post Man United loss playlist, so I may write an article about that or not. Yeah. We'll see you next time.